Okay, so we're going to begin Masechet Gittin. Masechet Gittin is Tishmoy Kenhu, which talks about the dinim of Gittin, which are complicated enough to take up 89 blasts and several dozen simonim in Shulchan Aruch. In the course of it, there's going to be a lot of important lumdish stuff, a lot of basic concepts in halacha. There's going to be a basic dinim that apply to shtaris in general, because after all, a get is a type of shtar. Has things having to do with edus, things having to do with shlichus. In particular, is going to be a nice chunk of the Masechta, etc. So the Mishnah begins, as Masechtas often do, with one of the less usual cases involving the topic. How maybe get Medina Sayyam? If somebody brings a get from overseas, actually Rashi says that Medina Sayyam over here means chutz la'aretz. Now, the issue is what the Gemara is going to talk about, the different issues, but the assumption at this point is, well, the Gemara is going to bring two possibilities, what the problem is with Chutz La'aretz versus Eretz Yisrael. One is that the people in Chutz La'aretz are less familiar with the ins and outs of the halachos of Gittin, and the other is that in case there's any objection, in case the husband is going to want to claim that this get is not valid, that the edim's signatures or the whole get as a whole is forged or whatever, you won't have people coming as often between Chutz La'aretz and Eretz Yisrael to be able to validate it. Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, it was fairly solidly Jewish in those days.
Are you saying you're excluding Bavel?
Bavel we'll talk about later on. Daf Vav. Wait. For the moment, from the Mishnah, we just know it's Eretz Yisrael. Period. And even within that, we're going to talk about So I made a get from Medina Sayyam. Somebody brings a get from overseas. So he has to be able to declare in front of Beistin, what we'll talk about later, in front of two or three people. We'll get to that in a few days. He has to be able to declare b'fanei nechtam. It was written in my presence, b'fanei nechtam, and it was signed in my presence. For the reasons I think Gemara is going to talk about. Rav Gamliel says not only if somebody comes from Medina Sayyam, which may mean like an overseas country, but even somebody who brings a get from Rekem and Cheger. Now, what are Rekem and Cheger? So Rashi points out that you have in the story with Hagar over there, where she meets Malachim over there and names the place Be'er Lachairoi. The pasuk describes it, Hine ben Kodesh or ben Bored, and in Targum it translates it, Ben Rekem Lecheger. So according to that, it would come out that Rekem and Cheger are two places in the desert in the southeast, or thereabouts, southwest rather, of Eretz Yisrael on the way to Mitzrayim, because that's where she was heading. So they're places on the border of Eretz Yisrael. So even though they're part of Eretz Yisrael, even though they're close enough to Eretz Yisrael, they're in Chutz La'aretz, but they're close enough to Eretz Yisrael. You would think maybe Medina Sayyam doesn't apply to them. Nevertheless, still that. There's a huge number of other explanations that the Farshim talk about where Rekem and Cheger is exactly. There's another possibility that Rekem over here is actually a place in the southeast of Eretz Yisrael, which is nowadays called Petra. And there's another possibility that someplace in the northeast of Eretz Yisrael in the Golan Heights. Whatever. Rabbi Eliezer, I'm not feeling the Kfar Ludim to Lud. Rabbi Eliezer says, even if you're bringing a get from Kfar Ludim to Lud. Now, Lud is in Eretz Yisrael proper. Kfar Ludim is a village not far from Lud. That's why it's called that. And in fact, not only is it near Lud, the people from Lud are always traveling back and forth to their Tosfos. But it's not in Eretz Yisrael proper. Now, we're going to get to in a minute. We'll get to the borders. We'll talk about when we get to the end of the mission. We talk about the borders. We'll discuss what we mean by Eretz Yisrael proper. No, you don't have to say b'fanei nechtam, b'fanei nechtam. Elohim may be medina sayam, only if you bring it from chutz la'aretz. Meaning, well, so what's the difference between medina sayam? So the Gemara will discuss later on about, hey, above what exactly the difference is between the different opinions in the Mishnah over here. One thing is, Tosfos points out that if we said medina sayam, then it would, that when the Tanakhama says Medina Sayyam, Tosfos says, specifically he means to exclude places like Rekem and Cheger. Even though, as far as the actual specific borders of Eretz Yisrael are concerned, they're outside it, but they're right adjacent to it. So therefore, there shouldn't be a reason to say B'fanei nechtam, B'fanei nechtam when you bring the guest from there.
And it's not Medina Sayyam.
Exactly, it's not Medina Sayyam. The Tanakhama of the Mishnah would say, whereas Rabbi Gamliel would say that you do, and Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Eliezer. Rashi also uses an expression. He says all of Chutz La'aretz is called Medina Sayyam. He says except for Bavel, which Bavel we'll talk about later on. That's Bavel. But there's a few different explanations why Rashi said that, And one that the Ran says is somewhat similar to that also. If you have the word Medina Hayam by itself, you would think it means places that are to the west of Eretz Yisrael. Because Yam means the west, it means the Mediterranean Sea. So by clarifying that, it means all Chutz Laaretz, but because if we just said Chutz Laaretz, then you would think, it's again, sort of like what Tosfos is saying, that it includes Rechem and Cheger, or it includes Kfarbodim. The point is, according to the Tanakhama, if you consider it, you have now, on the west side of Eretz Yisrael, you have the Mediterranean. There's no cities in there that are, sometimes if you look at borders on a map, sometimes you'll have like a little piece of one country that sticks into another. A little panhandle among the states also. You know, you can find on maps of the United States, right? You know, you have a bit of one state that sticks up in between some other states. That kind of thing is called, later on the Gemara is going to call Muvla. Like it's outside the borders, but it's sort of, if you were to draw a straight line from one part of the border to another part, it would be inside it. Because like it's surrounded by Eretz Yisrael on three sides, let's say. It's like a peninsula, sort of. Now, in the Mediterranean, there's no such thing. So by clarifying, by saying the word Medina Hayam, what we mean is, according to the Tanakhama, this is how Abadan explains it, only places that are not Muvla like that, that are not like peninsulas like that sticking in Eretz Yisrael. Places like Kfarbodim, that Rabbi Yehuda mentioned, which are like that. They're not in the actual borders of Eretz Yisrael, but they're surrounded by Eretz Yisrael on three sides. Those you don't have to say Bufanim Yester, Bufanim Yester. Because whatever the various reasons the Gemara is going to talk about why you need to wouldn't apply to such places, according to the Tanakhama. Okay, so the Chachamim are saying, the third opinion here, the fourth opinion here in the Mishnah, is saying that you only need to say B'fanei Nechtem, B'fanei Nechtem, Elam Amevim B'dinah Seyam, only you could bring from B'dinah Seyam, but also B'amloy Lechva Amevim B'dinah L'vdinah B'dinah Seyam, but also if you're bringing a get, or if you bring a get from Eretz Yisrael to Medina Sayyam, or you bring it, that's a Moloch, maybe, or you're bringing Medina to Medina to Medina Sayyam, among two different countries in Medina Sayyam. So in other words, the Tanakhama of the Mishnah was saying only you're bringing from Chutz Laaretz to Eretz Yisrael. But if you're bringing from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laaretz, it wouldn't be necessary. The Chachamim here are saying that, no, if you're bringing from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laaretz, you also need to be able to make that declaration. And also, if you're bringing it from one country to another within Chutz Laaretz, which the Tanakhama hadn't talked about. They're being more machmir. So Tzorach Shem Mufan and Nechta, and they have to be able to declare, the person bringing the get has to be able to declare it was written and signed in my presence. Right there, it actually makes a point of mentioning that the shliach we're talking about over here, now we'll learn as we go through the Masechta, there's two kinds of shluchim that can be involved in bringing a get. They're called a shliach halacha and a shliach kabbalah. A shliach halacha is basically his job is to be a mailman, to bring the get from point A to point B. It's still, when did the get actually take effect? When it goes from the husband to the wife, when it goes into the wife's reshut, as we'll talk about later on in the Masechta, the details of that. A shliach halacha, his job is not to make the get valid. His job is just to bring the get from point A, from the husband, to point B, someplace where the wife is. He still has to hand it to the wife before it becomes valid. That's a shliach halacha. So he's serving as a shliach of the husband. Then you have, there's another kind of shliach that we'll talk about as we go through the Masechta called shliach kabbalah. A shliach kabbalah is someone who's appointed by, who's standing in place of the wife. When he receives the get, when it comes into his hand or into his reshus, it takes effect, as if he was the wife.
And the one that takes from the husband and gives to the wife is called?
So that's called a shliach halacha.
Halacha.
That's called a shliach halacha. The shliach halacha stands in place of the husband, so that he has to give it to the wife, or to the, whether one shliach can give it to another, we'll deal with later in the Masechta. For now, let's not worry about that, but yeah. So what we're talking about in our Mishnah, it actually says specifically, is a shliach halacha. We're not talking about a shliach kabbalah. And before we talk about the reason is because the shliach kabbalah, there's no need for him to say b'fanei nechta, b'fanei nechta. The whole point of it is to show that the get is valid. Once he receives the get from the husband, it's immediately valid at that point. Therefore, there's no possibility that the husband will claim that it's forged or what have you. So it has to be a shliach halacha, where the husband sent it with him to bring it to the wife, and then later on, he's a shliach of the husband, where later on the husband may be able to claim, as we'll talk about in the Gemara, that there's something wrong with it.
But the husband has to tell him, and it was...
Not the husband. The shliach. The shliach has to be there when they're writing and signing the get, and then he declares, when he brings it to Eretz Yisrael, or to wherever he's bringing it, to the destination, he says, v'fanei nechtem, v'fanei nechtem. Reb Shimon Gamliel, Reb Shimon Gamliel says, even when you're carrying, not even from one country to another, but even you're bringing from one hegmunya to another hegmunya. A hegemon is a ruler, like a duke or a count or something. So from one county to another, let's say. Now, what are we talking about later on? The Rashi points out over here, the Gemara later on Daf Dalet is going to talk about the idea. We're talking about over here, let's say you have within one city itself, you have, let's say, two counts, each of which rules over a different part of the city. And they won't let people travel from one part of the city to the other. Those of us who are old enough to remember will remember East Berlin and West Berlin, that sort of thing. So even that, you have to say, you have to be able to make that declaration for the get to be valid. Rabbi Yehuda says the borders of Eretz Yisrael for this purpose are as follows. Merekem from Mizrach, anywhere from Rekem and eastward, is considered Medinas Hayam for this purpose, which therefore this Rekem evidently has to be on the east side of Eretz Yisrael. So again, like I said, there's several different possibilities where what it would be in modern terms. Me'ashkelon adorim ba'ashkelon adorim, from Ashkelon anywhere southward, and Ashkelon itself is considered like part of the south. So Rechem itself is considered like part of the east, meaning it's outside of Israel. Similarly, Ashkelon is outside of Israel, which brings Tosfos into a long discussion. What are you talking about? Ashkelon is definitely part of Israel.
Yeah.
And so therefore, so Tosfos explains basically that...
It's the same Ashkelon as
Rechem. It is the same Ashkelon, more or less. But the vort is this. We talk about in many places in Shas, there's two definitions of the borders of Eretz Yisrael. There's Ole Mitzrayim and there's Ole Bavel. There's what they conquered during the period after they came out of Mitzrayim and conquered Eretz Yisrael, where Ashkelon is part of that area where they conquered, the Plishtim got it back at points, but whatever, it went back and forth, but at times the Jewish people had control of it. As opposed to then there's the Kibush of Ole Bavel, what the people who came up from Babel not conquered, they weren't conquering, they were resettling Eretz Yisrael, but where they resettled. Some people want to say that maybe also includes the areas that the Hashmonaim conquered and that Hurdus conquered and whatever. Let's not get into that. We don't have to get into those details, but whatever it is, Ashkelon is outside that area. So even though, yes, Ashkelon was part of the original borders of Eretz Yisrael, but it wasn't part of the borders within Oled Babel. And therefore, for the reasons that the Gemara is going to talk about, either you don't have so many Jews there so they don't have Bathe Dinim, so they don't know the halachas, or that you don't have people commonly traveling between there and central Eretz Yisrael. So either way, it comes out that Ashkelon, for that purpose, is considered outside Eretz Yisrael. So, Me'akka Latzofen, Ve'akka Katzofen, and also from Akka anywhere further north, and Akka itself is considered part of the north. Again, Akka is considered outside Eretz Yisrael, which again, Tosfos discusses that it's not so simple. Parts of Akka are in Eretz Yisrael, parts of it outside Eretz Yisrael, and later on, the Ches, the Gemara is going to discuss that maybe part of the border does extend north of Akka, maybe Akka is not the absolute northernmost point.
Akka today is in Lebanon.
No, Akka today is on the coast of Israel. It's up near Haifa. A little bit north of Haifa, I think. Yeah.
Isn't there an echo in Lebanon?
You're thinking, no, I'm not sure what you're thinking of. But now we only mentioned three directions over there. So the Pastor Moferach has an explanation. He says each of these is marking off one corner of Eretz Yisrael. Rechem, he says, is in the northeast. He says that Rechem is in the northeast, in the Golan Heights. And there is. There's evidence from various places. There's a Braisa that's quoted in the Yerushalmi that lists in some detail the borders of Eretz Yisrael, and they found some years ago a mosaic floor in an ancient shul near Beit Shan that has this Braisa written in the mosaic. I guess because people needed to know that halacha was considered Eretz Yisrael for purposes of Shemitah and whatever. Anyway, look it up sometime. It's called the Beit Rehov inscription. Not Beit. I think it's called the Rehov inscription. The Rehov inscription. Yeah. So it recalls, yeah. Interesting thing. Anyway. So Rechem then is in the northeast, in the Golan, more or less in the Golan Heights. Akko is in the northwest. Ashkelon is in the southeast, and is in the southwest. The southeast, you don't have to mention. The Yam HaMelech, everybody knows where the Yam HaMelech is. No. Ashkelon is not south of the Yam.
Ashkelon, the southeast.
No, that's what I'm saying. The southeastern corner of Eretz Yisrael in the original borders that are listed in, yeah, if you look in Parshas Maaseh and in Sefer Yehoshua, the southeastern border of Eretz Yisrael is the Yam HaMelech. So therefore, so you have it all laid out. Rav Meir and Akka Eretz Yisrael are Gittin. Rav Meir says, no, Akka is like Eretz Yisrael proper as far as Gittin. You don't have to declare B'fanei Nechta, B'fanei Nechta, if you bring a get from there to Eretz Yisrael proper. Continue the Mishnah. Maybe get there to Israel. Ain't it Tzarach Shiyem Ufanim Nechtem Ufanim Nechtem? If you bring the get again as a Shliach Hilacha from one place to another within Eretz Yisrael, you do not have to make that declaration. The Yesh Olav Oredim, and if it happens later on, the husband claims this get is forged. Yiskayim B'Chosmav, then you can validate it using its signers. Meaning, in other words, there's various ways of validating signatures. We talked about it before in Silvis and in some other places. Rashi mentions a couple of them over here. One is you bring the Edom to Beis Din and have them testify, yep, these are our signatures. Or you have other Edom say, yes, we recognize those people's signatures. But other than that, the point is, Rashi says, we assume, unless the husband argues that this get is forged, we assume it's valid. We assume it's bad. We assume it's not forged, and we also assume that the Beis Din that supervised the writing of the original get knows the relevant dinim. And also there are edim always available to validate it because people are always traveling to and fro in Eretz Yisrael. This is my time. What's the reason why you need to be able to say b'fanei nechta b'fanei nechtem? Rabba Omar, l'fisha ein b'kiyam l'shma. Because in Medina Sayyam, they're not such bnei Torah. They don't know the din that the get has to be written l'shma. The Rambam lists the 10 basic prerequisites you need minat Torah for a get to be kosher. A lot of the things that we're familiar with in Gittin are actually only dinim de Rabbanan. We'll get to them later in the Masechta. That the exact names have to be written in proper spelling, that there has to be a date, etc. But there's 10 basic things in a get that are midaraisa. One of them is that it has to be written l'shmoy and l'shmoy. It has to be written specifically for this particular husband, with this particular husband in mind, and with this particular wife in mind. Later on in the Masechta, the mission is going to give examples. Suppose you have two couples in town where the husband's name is Yossel and the wife's name is Rachel. And then one of them has a get written for him to divorce his wife, and the other one wants to use it for him to divorce his wife. No good. It wasn't written, even though it has their names written in it, it wasn't written l'shma and l'shma. So people are not familiar with that din in Chutz La'aretz. So according to Rashi, yes, what we do is when they're saying b'fanei nechta, b'fanei nechtem, along with that, we're going to ask them, was it written l'shma? To the shliach halacha over here. Tosfos has various objections to that, including, I mean, so what about all the other dinim of a get? In that case, if we're only worried about lishma, why aren't we worried that the people in Chutz La'aretz don't know, in Nisayan, don't know the other basic dinim of a get? It can't be written on something that was attached to the ground, let's say, and then detached afterwards. It can't be predated, etc. That's what we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that in a few lines. Wait. Anyway, so Tosfos' answer is that when we say that in Mekian, what we really mean is in Chutz La'aretz, they don't necessarily accept the validity of this drasha. How do we know that a get has to be written l'shma and l'shma? Because the pasuk says v'chotam lot sefer krisus. They don't necessarily hold that this drasha that lot means it has to be written l'shma. Therefore, we're more concerned. They may not have done that. They do accept the other genium, and therefore we have no reason to worry about that. Also, Tosfos objects to Rashi's idea, saying that you have to ask the Edim whether it was written l'shma the Shliach, when he says v'fanei nechta v'fanei nechtem, they have to ask him also was it written l'shma. Tosfos objects to that also. We never find such a thing any place. Therefore, Tosfos just says no. Once he's saying v'fanei nechtem, we understand. We assume that that also means l'shma. The whole point of according to Rava, the whole point of him saying v'fanei nechtem is that it was done validly. So therefore, we can assume that they also includes in it that it was written l'shma, etc. Whereas Rashi says you would have to ask him. Rashi sort of contradicts himself, because later on Gimel Amud Aleph, he implies that you don't have to ask him. Some of us should deal with that contradiction in Rashi as well, yeah. Aside from that, there are other beforeshim give other answers. What we're talking about in Bekiyim l'shma, the Ravid gives an interesting answer, which is you could have a sofer. You know, if you have a sofer who's having to produce a lot of gittin, he might write a bunch of blanks. He might write a bunch of blank gittin and maybe even fill them in with sample names, for example, just to practice. And then later on, somebody will tell him, hey, you know, in your collection you have over there one that says Yossel and Sara, can I buy that one? And they're not going to realize, either the surfer is busy writing dozens of them a day, he's not going to realize that, you know what, that's no good. So therefore we need to be more careful about that, as opposed to the other kinds of things. Let's say Tosfos gives one of the examples that you're not allowed to write a get m'chubur, you're not allowed to write a get on something that was attached and then detach it, and that's not a common enough situation that we have to worry about that. Rava Amar Fishein Edim Mitzurim L'Kaimer. Rava says there's another reason, because you won't find Edim to be able to validate it. People don't commonly enough travel between the Dinas Yam and Eretz Yisrael. So therefore, if the husband were to claim that this get is forged, if it's from one place in Eretz Yisrael to another, no problem. You can easily either find the original Edim, or you can find people who know those Edim and will recognize their signatures. If you bring it from Chutz La'aretz, from the Dinas Yam, not necessarily are you going to find such people. Okay, they're going to ask my benayu, what's the practical difference between the two reasons? The answer is, ikka benayu, to ask you a beit shrei.
Between which reasons?
Between these two reasons, of Rava and Rava. Rabbah saying that the problem is that in Medina Sayyam they're not familiar with Lishma, or they don't accept it or whatever. We're worried the get may not have been written Lishma. According to Rava, the reason is because you won't have Adim to validate it. So what's the difference? Either way, you have to say Bufana Nechtem, Bufana Nechtem. The answer is, Ikebenai Gafsiu Beitre. Yes, but one difference would be, what if you have, instead of one Shliach bringing it, as we talk about in the Mishnah, what if you have two Shluchim bringing the game? So now, according to Rabbah, you still have the problem. You still have the issue. The original writers of the get may not have written it in the Shema. Therefore, you need to, these two shluchim need to be able to say b'fan nechtem, b'fan nechtem. According to Rabbah's reason, no problem. They themselves are two edim. If the husband claims it's forged, we ourselves can certify that we recognize the signatures of those edim. So that's one difference. Inam in Medina la Medina, Eretz Yisrael. Another possibility. What about between one area, between one province in Eretz Yisrael and another? For example, Rashi says Yehuda and Galil. At this point, the Gemara is assuming, later on we'll revisit it later on, Daf Dalet. At this point, the Gemara is assuming that people don't commonly travel from Galil to Yehuda or vice versa. There were actually periods, especially during the time, late in the time of the Second Message, when they were actually under different governments, under different rulers. So therefore, there was under various descendants of Hordas, doesn't matter. You can look in Josephus for the details if you're just that curious. But the point is that therefore, so now you have the other way around. According to Rabbah, there's no need to say Bufana Nechtem, Bufana Nechtem in that case. Both in Yehuda and in the Galil, we can assume that they know the din of Lishma and the various other dinim that are relevant to a get, and therefore no need to declare it. According to Rabbah, Ein Edim, B'tzuyim L'kaima, and you have one shliach bringing it from Galil to Yehuda, he's going to have to say Bufana Nechtem, Bufana Nechtem, because otherwise, because that avoids the possibility of the husband declaring, of the husband claiming that it was forged, which according to Rabbah is the point of it. Or a third possibility, if it's within the same country, in Medina Sayyam. So again, according to Rabbah, you need to say, b'fana nechtem, b'fana nechtem, there's still the Lishma problem. According to Rabbah, no problem. The same way as within Yehuda itself, or within the Galil itself, it's easy to find Edim to validate it. The same way within one country in Chutzlar, it's easy enough to find Edim to validate it. So for those three cases would be an actual difference in halacha between Rabbah's reasons. You might ask, well, Rabbah de Amal Pishen Bekiyim Lishma. Fine. Well, according to, by the way, as far as the first reason, Dasyu Beitrei, where the Gemara had said two people bring it, and Rashi says the point is those two people themselves can validate it. Tosfos asks from that, but so what? I mean, what if the husband later on claims that it was forged? These shluchim might bring the get, and then travel off on a business trip or whatever, and they're still not going to be available. How have you gained it?
Why would it have to be available once they declare it to begin with?
That's the thing. According to Rava, when two shluchim bring it, you don't have to declare b'fana nechtem, because at that point, because they're able to validate it. But what happens if they bring it on Tuesday, Wednesday they leave, and Thursday the husband claims it's forged? So if they said b'fana nechtem, that would take care of the problem. But according to Rava, we're saying that they shouldn't have to.
Then
there could be a problem. So Tosfos instead says that the good thing when Dasyu Beitrei is we will not, if they come and say that the husband sent them, we won't even believe him to say that I didn't send them. Because they're two against one, basically. So that'll be the good thing. So now, even if they bring the get on Tuesday, leave on Wednesday, and on Thursday the husband says that then the husband is matter, doesn't matter. We'll throw out his argument. According to Rabbah, that you're saying that the reason why you need to get the shliach to be able to say b'fana nechtem is because they're not familiar with Lishma. Like you asked, the boy's right. Shouldn't you need two shulchim to be able to say that? Shouldn't it be midi da'avi akol edius shema Torah, just like any other edius in the Torah, which requires two? The answer is no. Eid echad neman b'isurin. One eid can be believed in matters of isur. Namely, so Rashi says, we see for the fact, I mean, you believe any yid that he took truma and meiser from his produce, you believe any yid that he did a valid shchita without having to stand there and watch him do it, that he took out the gid anasha and chaylev, etc. So that establishes the precedent that we can accept eid echad when it comes to Yisurim. I mean, this is what makes it possible to eat by somebody's house, Rashi says in Yevamos. Otherwise, you would always need edim that the person keeps a kosher kitchen. Tosfos argues on that because that's different. You could argue all these things are things that you're able to do yourself. therefore Tosfos instead learns from a different situation that a man is allowed to have relations with his wife, that she was a nidda, and then that he's able to believe her, one aid, that she did a proper bedikah and that she toivled. So too, we had Eidecha, this Naaman, his Naaman's maker Osir, not the maker Mutter. Yeah, here we're talking about to be Matir, this woman, to remarry. We're talking about one Shliach saying, Bufana Nechtem, bringing a get, is enough to make this woman able to remarry. So far, we're according to Rava. Rava will deal with soon. Rava will deal with later on Gimel Amud Aleph, but right now we're dealing according to Rava. No, that Eidecha Naaman be certain Rava accepts also, but we're not up to that yet. Hey, like I'm gonna ask why? No, you know when you believe that one aid when it comes to an iser, suppose for example you have a piece of meat, it's a suffix, whether it's chaylev or whether it's fat, which is mutter to eat. There's no chazaka that there's an iser over here. So fine, one aid comes and tells you that there's no iser over here. Fine. But here you have a chazaka that she's already known to be an ishes ish. So have a double shabbat. So therefore, you have you're talking about over here. Not as more chomer, but the difference is when it comes to, for example, you have somebody, let's say, who's offering you a piece of fruit, and he says, I took truma from it. Fine, there was never any chazaka that this fruit was osur. Right. So therefore, you can say that fine, one aid is believed. If we had known at one point, let's say, that this fruit is tevel, and now he's telling you that I took truma from it, maybe not. Maybe not. But here we're talking about Eishes Ish. We know for a fact she was an Eishes Ish. How can we allow one aid to do that? Have a Dovash of Erva. It's a case of a matter involving Erva. The aim Dovash of Erva pochus Mishnayim. And as we learned in Sota, ordinarily you need two aid in order to establish a heter in a situation of Dovash of Erva. And there are Rishonim who have abuse over here, that's actually two different questions. One is that you have a chazaka, and number two is Dabar Shabbat Erva. Anyway, so the point is, you're back to the question, how according to Rabba, if you're worried about the kashrus of the get, then how can you believe one shliach? The answer is Roy B'ki in hand, yes, but most people who write Gittin are familiar with the Dinim. They do know the Dinim. Of the Shema and the rest of the Dinim of Get. The Afilul of Meir, the Chayy Shlemiyota, and even appointed a mayor who we find, we learned at the end of Yevamos, that he's concerned about cases of Miut as well. He's concerned even to make sure that you don't have a situation where something is where you have a minority where something may be Osir. We had a case over there about doing Yibum between a Katan and a Katana, involving a Katan or a Katana, where he says, what if the Katan grows up to be a Sris and the Katana grows up to be an Ilonis? And then it was an invalid Yibum or an invalid Chalitza. The Chachamim aren't worried about that. The mayor is. But Stam Safri, did Dayanim Migmah Gmir? Yes, but not just anybody writes a get. It's Sofrim of the Dayanim who are accustomed to writing Gittin. And they Migmah Gmir. They definitely know. They definitely know the halachos of even Mishma. So you might have. There might be one Safri the Daini out there who doesn't know, but he's a miut of a miut. Even a mayor is not going to be concerned about such a far-fetched possibility.
Fine, but the fact that they're Bakim does still need.
Well, so therefore, so Rabba is saying. So we do make a takana that you need b'fana nechtem, as the Gemara is going to say now. Really, we shouldn't need it at all. Really, we should be able to, a get is brought, we should automatically be able to assume that it was written l'shma and that all the other details were followed. However, for Rabbanon, Uda Asruch, usually it's just that Rabbanon required you to say b'fana nechtem, because after all, you do have that possibility that, let's say, for example, Rashi gives the example that, you know, that Yossel married to Sora finds another Yossel married to Sora who's written a get and asks him to buy it off him. So there is that possibility. The Hacha, but in our case over here, Mishum Iguna Akilu Barabanan, because otherwise you're going to have a case of Igun, because what are you doing? You're having a get that's been brought in with the Dinas Hayam. If you're going to require two shluchim to bring it, then in other words, normally what we say is normally we're going to require the two edim to actually be there when it's signed and to bring it. But in this case, because it's being brought from Medinas Hayam, and there's no way that not necessarily is it going to happen that you're going to have two people willing to travel with this get from Medinas Hayam. So therefore, she's going to wind up being an aguna. Yeah.
Because
two people don't want to travel. So therefore, Akshila Barabban, and therefore the Chachamim were meiko on her and said, fine, but no. Listen, what we're saying is that really we shouldn't need it at all. Really, by logic, anytime we receive a get, we should automatically be able to assume anybody who writes gittin knows the gittin. But not just people off the street who write gittin. It's people who work for the Beis Din. It's scribes who work for the Beis Din and do these things on a daily basis. You can assume that they know that they know the halachas. However, to be on the safe side, we want to say b'fana nechta. But we're not going to go so far as requiring two edim to do that. As long as the original get was signed by two edim, and we don't have any reason at the moment to think that it's forged, because Rabba is not talking about any possibility of it being forged. He's worried about the lishma problem. So fine, the rabbanim can be makel and say that given that without anything else, we would assume this get is valid, even without the shliach declaring it all, b'fana nechtem. We're requiring it to be on the safe side, but we'll only require one, we'll get away with one shliach doing it.
And we don't test it on the halachos of gittin.
Well, you can't. I mean, if the get is being brought to Eretz Yisrael from Medinas Hayam.
In Medinas Hayam.
But the get is being brought to Eretz Yisrael. The get is being based in Eretz Yisrael. When they're supervising the giving of it to the woman and then allowing her to remarry afterwards, they don't have the ability to go and question the Beis Din in Medinas Hayam. They can't call them up and ask, "Are you familiar with the halachas?" The less greater, they have to rely on the chazakah, not more than a chazakah, the fact that the overwhelming majority of Safri the Daini know what they're doing and know the dinim and lishma, even in Chutzlaret. And therefore, so yes, we are going to require, as a safety net, we're going to require b'fana nechtem, which again, Rashi then says that you're going to ask the shliach whether it was done l'shma, and according to Tosfos, at that point, once he says that, we can assume, but we're not going to go so far as requiring two shluchim for that purpose. Because then you'd have a situation of igur, and then any time you have the husband is in the chutzah, that's in the wife is in Eretz Yisrael, or any of the other cases where you'd have to say b'fana nechtem, if you're going to require two shluchim to bring it, then the get is never going to be very hard to get a valid get, and she's going to be stuck. Okay, high kula. What are you talking about? This isn't a kula saying that you only need one shliach. Chumrah, it comes out to be a chumrah, actually. Because if you have two shluchim bringing it to begin with, the husband will not be able to object and say, wait a minute, this is a forged get. For the reasons that we talked about before, Rashi had said because they're able to validate it. Rashi had said because they're able to validate the signatures on it. They're able to say we recognize the signatures of the original two witnesses. And Tosfos says because it's two against one.
Right.
If you only have one shliach, then you're being meiko on her at the beginning, but there comes out a chumrah at the end, the possibility that the husband may afterwards come and claim that this get was forged,
and so it's a chumrah
in other words, yeah. What do we mean by posole? By the way, Rashi says it means that outright he'll outright be able to posole it. Tosfos argues.
Okay.
But that's not what we're going to deal with. No. So Tosfos says that the issue is not necessarily is the husband going to be able to make it possible per se. I mean, he's one at best. You have one against one. What it means is he's going to be moitzi laz. There's going to be grounds for suspicion that it was a possible get, and that'll create problems. Yeah, people will be afraid to remarry that woman because you never know. Eventually, the husband may. Yeah. Well, there is that also. Yeah.
Probably just want that. That's why he would come and make such a.
But that's the question. In other words, why are we allowing one shliach to bring the get and say b'fana nechtem, if we're then opening up the possibility and now the husband can go and object?
Right.
The answer is, no, because we say later on, Hayim Adbeis, we're going to say, when the shliach brings this get, And it's going to declare b'fanei nechta. How many people does he have to declare it in front of and give it to the woman? Rabbi Yechon and Rabbi Chanina argue. Chadam of Nek Beis, Chadam of Nek Gimel. One says you need two people there to witness it, and one says you need three. And the reason is the Gemara ends up discussing over there. It has to do with the question, basically, is the Shliach himself considered a member of the Beis Din? If you say that he's considered a member of the Beis Din, then you have two of him plus two people, makes a Beis Din of three. If you say that not, then you need three other people besides him.
Okay,
anyway, so therefore, me'ikra me'dak dayik, so therefore the shliach, when he first receives it from the husband, is going to be very careful to make sure that the husband is giving it to him of his own free will, and that it's a valid get. He's not going to come afterwards. The shliach is not going to put himself in a situation where his truthfulness may be questioned, where its credibility may be questioned. Because then...
So that's the thing.
So
how is he going to verify and make sure?
No, so that's the thing. So because since the shliach knows that it's not just he's going to give this woman the get privately and say b'fanei nechta, and afterwards if the husband is going to come and claim it's forged, the shliach is going to say, I don't know anything, I had nothing to do with it. No, he's going to have to be actually doing this in front of two or three people. He's not going to want that his...
When he arrives.
That's the point. When he arrives. No, so therefore, he knows in advance that when he comes to Eretz Yisrael with this get, he's going to have to gather together two or three people and declare in front of them b'fanei nechta. Therefore, to begin with, when he's still in chuppah, receiving this get from the husband, he's going to be very careful to make sure that it's all on the up and up, because he doesn't want his credibility to be called into question later. So far, this is all according to Rabba's reason. This is according to Rabba's reason that the problem with the get from Chutz La'aretz is Lishma, then therefore that's why we're saying, so this is the whole discussion up until now, why it is that we can get away with only one Shliach doing that. Now let's turn to Rabba. Well, the Rabba Da'amla Fishayin Edim Mitzvim, we're basically going to go over the same argument for him. Well, the Rabba Da'amla Fishayin Edim Mitzvim L'Kaimoi, what about according to Rabba, who says the problem with a get from Medina Sayyam is that you don't have Edim available to certify it? Again, Libori Tzure. That's Rabba.
Rabba,
we're talking about. That the problem is that you don't have Edim from Chutz La'aretz commonly enough traveling to Eretz Yisrael to be able to certify it. Edim themselves won't be there. There won't be friends of theirs there who recognize their signature, etc. So again, Libori Tzure, why shouldn't we say then that you need two shluchim, not just one? The answer is needed to have a kium shtoris d'alma. So part of the question. Needed to have a kium shtoris d'alma. Wouldn't it be the same as any regular case of certifying signatures on a shtar? Any time that a shtar is called into question and you need somebody to verify the signatures, you always need two edim to do it. In fact, in the last paragraph of Bavastra, the Gemara has some very elaborate scenarios over there of how to make sure that you always have two edim testifying to each of the signatures.
The get was written in
Wait. You're talking about a get. The get was written in Chutzlar. It's in front of Edim. Yes. In Chutzlar. So it was written in front of Edim. Well, we assume it was written in front of Edim, right? There's Edim signed on it. But now it's being brought out to Israel, and Robert is bringing up the point that if the husband were to claim that it's forged, you're going to need somebody to verify the signatures. Normally, when it comes to verifying signatures in base, you need two Edim. So how are we accepting one Shliach's word, b'fanei nechta? The answer is, again, aid achad nevin b'isurin, true, but again, when we're dealing with matters of isur, you can accept one aid. And again, the same question as before, eimer damrin and aid achad nevin b'isurin, k'chaticha, safak shachel of safak rashomon v'lay tzchazik isur. Again, that works, but there's no chazaka that there was ever an isur here in the first place. Aval hacha is tzchazik isur de eishet ish, but over here you have a chazaka that we know she was an eishet ish, and have a davash of erva, and it's also an issue involving erva, the ain davash of erva possibly bays, and you always need two aidim for that. So fine, even if you set aside the Kiyum Shtoris business, you still should need two people on that ground. And again, and the answer is, B'dinhud B'Kiyum Shtoris Nami L'Liboi. The truth is that even if we look at it from the point of view of Kiyum Shtoris, that we need Edim to validate the signatures, in reality, we shouldn't really need two Edim for that. Kiddur Shlokish, like what Shlokish says, the Omer Shlokish, Edim Achasum Halashtar, when you have Edim that are signed on a document, Nasuk Mishinech Kuru Adosin Rebeisin. It's the equivalent of their ages having been checked out, having been cross-examined in Beis Din. So ordinarily, we should be able to assume that when we have a shtar over here that's signed by two edim, that it's a genuine shtar and that Beis Din knew what they were doing.
What do you mean the equivalent is Dakin? In Dakin, there's one person who checks two signatures?
No. In other words, no. It, meaning, when you have, for example, in this case, a get that's signed by two agents, the fact that you have signed on this get, Reuven aid and Shimon aid, is the equivalent of that the Beis Din, in whose presence the get was written, had actually, it's the equivalent of Beis Din having cross-examined these people and made sure that the shtar is a valid shtar and the signatures are valid signatures.
We're saying that two aidim is the equivalent of a Beis Din.
No, we're saying that two aidim signed on a shtar is the, let's forget about get for a second. Let's imagine, for example, a case, any shtar, let's say shtar choy. What is the shtar choyv? It's testifying that Reuven owes Shimon X amount of money, and Levi and Yehuda are signing. When you have such a shtar that comes to another Beis Din with Levi and Yehuda signed on it, the other Beis Din can assume, Minat Torah at least, that it's the equivalent of that the original Beis Din, when Levi and Yehuda signed, it's the equivalent of the original Beis Din having cross-examined them and made sure, do you know for a fact that Reuven owes this money to Shimon? And how do you know it? And what were the circumstances? And what was the date? Et cetera. And everything that's written in the shtar, it's as if based in and actually cross-examined them about it. So at least on a midaraisa level, you don't need such a thing as kiyum shtaris. The whole concept of kiyum shtaris is the rabbanon. The rabbanon, who da'astro. So the rabbanon required that ordinarily that you need two edim to validate the signatures. But again, here you have a problem of igun, that if you're going to require two shluchim, it's not going to happen, and therefore she's going to end up being stuck. Therefore, they were mafia to go back to one shliach. And once he says Rufan Nechtem, that would be the equivalent of two people coming and saying we recognize these signatures.
Because we assume
the signatures are valid anyhow, and it's only a chumra de rabbanon that we even require anybody to validate them.
The one sealed.
What?
This is on a get not sealed by a bezin that they saw it.
Not necessarily.
It can be written by any cipher and signed.
Yeah. I mean, it's done in the presence of a Beis Din, but there's not necessarily a certification of Beis Din on it that these are valid signatures. What were you going to say?
No certification at all, no stamp in the back.
No,
nothing. No brand.
No.
Why do you think those signatures are good? So there's an idea that
Mefarshim bring, I think, based on Yerushalmi or whatever, that Minatoda, we don't assume that people have the chutzpah to forge an entire document with signatures. Okay. The question again is, hi, Kulahu, you're telling me this is a Kulah? Chumrahu. This comes out to be a Chumrah. Because if you were to require two shluchim to say b'fana nechtem, then that closes off any possibility of the husband objecting that it's forged. But if you only have one shliach, I'll see Baal Ma'ar Repasale, then the husband will be able to come and object and possibly passel it, outright passel it, or at least create laws, whatever.
Yeah,
and again, the answer is before, Kivit, like before, Kivit to Oma Ma'ar, say Kama Noistila, because we said that the get, when the shliach comes with this get, it has to be delivered to the wife in the presence of Rabbi Yechim, Rabbi Chanina, Chadam of Neshtaim, Chadam of Negimel, two or three people. So again, Mi'ikra made it dayek, so originally the shliach is going to be very careful when he receives this get. The loy after loy roy nafshi, he doesn't want to impeach his own credibility. And therefore he'll make sure ahead of time to make sure that the husband is really giving this man a sign, and that it was done validly by Beis Din, and if the signatures are genuine, etc.
And that still doesn't prevent the husband from coming.
Doesn't prevent the husband, but it does. That's the thing. Rashi says it does, actually. Once, if later on, even though there's only been the one shliach, if later on the husband comes and claims it's forged, we'll tell him, you know what, against that we have a chazakah, that this fellow, the shliach who will forget, doesn't want to destroy his credibility in the presence of two or three people. Therefore, we're not going to accept your argument. Now, okay, Marshall points out, if the husband brings solid aiders, that it's forged, that's different, fine, but that's a bit of a far-fetched scenario. That might be the case even if you had two people bringing it, but at least like this, it avoids any possibility that the husband can just wake up the next morning and decide to challenge it. Probably it's time she wants to be married, yeah. It wasn't nowadays what they do, actually, because the halachas of gittin over time, as in the Gemara itself, they're complex enough, and later on, because of the different opinions of Rishonim and Achronim, and in general, and again, we try to satisfy all the opinions to be on the safe side. So there's a vast number of details and halachas involved in the writing and the giving of a get. There comes an issue, you don't want, so it goes back to the times of the Rishonim, you don't want that if this get still is intact and later on she wants to remarry, or later on, you know, somebody finds it 100 years later and finds some detail in it that's questionable, then you're going to have big problems over there. So therefore, the minhag develops. I've been an aid by some gifting. I've seen this done. The get is handed to the woman so that it takes effect, and then Beis Din takes it back from her. They rip it, a pera Beis Din. They rip an X shape in it, and then they give her a document signed by the sign and sealed by the Beis Din saying that she received a valid get on such and such a date and such and such a place. But that thing itself is not a get. Therefore, there's no possibility of any finding of psul in details of it.
No.
I suppose she could keep it as a keepsake if she wants, but basically it's ripped with a keta based in, so at that point there's no validity to it anymore.
So they destroy it?
So I think actually they do. I don't think they let her keep it as a keepsake or anything. They give her that document, and I think the one that was ripped as a keta based in, I think they take it and destroy it. Yeah. So now we've gone through, so we've explained then the details according to both Rabbah and according to Rabbah's reasons why one shliach is good enough to be able to declare b'fanei nechtem, and why we're able to believe him. Okay. Now, the Rabbah, my time alayam is for Rabbah, so why doesn't Rabbah agree with Rabbah's reason about the problem of Lishma? The answer is, Amalach mikatanim b'fanei nechtem lishma, because you don't have the shliach not saying anything about lishma. Why should we assume that by saying b'fanei nechtem, he's taking care of the lishma problem? V'rabba, so what would Rabba? No, okay, so according to Rashi, you ask him afterwards, but again, Rashi over here says that you don't ask him, that you assume it. Because the Sema Chatzila, you assume it. Anyway, if the whole point is to avoid the Lashma problem, he should have to lachatzila. The nusach he should have to say should be b'fanei nechtem lishma, b'fanei nechtem lishma. The Rabbah, so what would Rabbah answer to that? He would say, b'dinu d'lisni hachi, you're right, by rights the Chachamim should have made the Takana to say it that way. Ella, the problem is, the imapshis le dibura, because if you make him say too much, osim migziyeh, he may cut it down. If you make him say, b'fanei nechtem lishma, he may leave out some of the words. And if you leave that some of the words, he won't say that it's lishma. If you're going to...
So it's the same result of...
Because, in other words, the point is, Rashi says, the Chachamim made a certain formula has to be said for the get to be valid.
Right.
The formula is b'fanei nechtem. If you don't say that formula, then it's possible, midrabanan. And the children are considered mamzerim, midrabanan. The children of any future marriage. So therefore, we want to make lachatchila that the formula that he says, b'fanei nechtem, is something that's going to be said exactly the way it's supposed to be.
And it's more likely to be said.
It's more likely to be said without lishma than with. So if he doesn't say it, so if they make a formula lachatchila without the word lishma, fine, we can ask him afterwards, or we can assume that it's lishma, whatever. If we make him say lishma, he may leave it out, and then that's going to create a problem. We're talking about midrabanan. One of the Mepharshim, I think it's the Tiferes Yisrael, points out that the Gemara is an example of what it says in Pirkei Avos, called Amar B'Dvarim Mei Vichet. And the more words brings to a potential on air. Yeah. Okay, the question is, Hashtanami Osu Migziyeh, fine. It's saying b'fanei nechtem, can't he maybe cut that down also? The answer is chodim itzlas goyiz, chodim itzhauti loy goyiz. Yes, but he might leave out one out of three words. If you make him say b'fanei nechtem lishma, he may leave out one of the words, and that'll be a problem. If you make him say b'fanei nechtem, that's only two words. He's not going to leave out one. He's not going to leave out one word. And then before I should talk about the it doesn't matter. Well, what do we mean when we say two or three words over here? Are we talking about are we talking about the actual three words b'fanei nechtem lishma or b'fanei nechtem lishma, or are we talking about three different statements? There's b'fanei nechtem, and lishma, where each of those statements by itself makes sense. So you might leave out one of them and keep the other two. But b'fanei nechtem without b'fanei nechtem has no meaning, and neither does b'fanei nechtem and without b'fanei nechtem, because the get has to be written and signed. And lishma by itself certainly has no meaning. So therefore if we make him say b'fanei nechtem, two statements, we're not worried he's going to leave out one of them.
And we're sure that if lishma not said, it's still valid.
Well, that's what we're saying. That the Chachamim, the Chachamim did not make the Takana that you have to say the word lishma. This, by the way, brings up an interesting point. The Rosh says, based on this Gemara over here, it seems to come out that he has to davka say it in Lashon Kodesh, in the actual Lashon that we're saying over here, the actual words in Lashon Kodesh, b'fanei nechtem.
Yeah.
We didn't mention.
Well, we haven't talked about that, but the Ramah discusses it. He said in Darche Moshe, he says, I'm not sure about that, but in Ramah, in Shulchan Aruch, he says that yes, that Yeshua Emirim, based on that Rosh, that you do have to say it in Lashon Kodesh, and therefore, if the Shliach does not know the words in Lashon Kodesh, then based on that, read it to him word by word, say Nichta, say Nefer, and explain to him what he's saying.
Was that listed in Seitah?
No, it wasn't. No, because this is only a Tachan of the Rabbanan, and so to which other things are right. But it comes out, according to that, that you have to say it, in Lashon Kodesh. And one of the arguments is, because if we're saying over here it's a matter of two or three words, the Chassam Sofer talks about this, two or three words only works in Lashon Kodesh. If you were saying it in English instead, it would take a lot more than two or three words. You'd have the same problem. You might leave out some of the words. So obviously the implication must be, which is what the Rosh is saying, that it has to be in Lashon Kodesh, and therefore it's tack only two words in each phrase. Rabba, my time alone, I'm a Karava. So now, going back the other way around, why doesn't Rabba agree with Rava's reason? That the problem is that ain't aided Mitzurim time, right? The answer is, Amalach, in Ken, Nisim, Bufana, Nechta, Mitzuloi. In that case, if all you're worried about is certifying the aided signatures, all the Shliach should need to say is it was signed in my presence. Because that, in other words, saying I recognize that these people actually signed it. Bufana, Nechta, Lovely. Why should we need him to say that it was written, fine, it has to be written in the Shema, but that's Rava's reason. Rava doesn't hold that. Rava does not agree with Rava's reason, because Rava's not worried about the Shema problem. He's worried about the signatures of the Edim. In that case, then why Bufana, Nechta? Shema means written in the Shema. Obviously, that means that the reason we have to say it is because we need the Shema. But Rava, whereas Rava would answer back to that, the din of the listening hachi, true, the din could have just been that he just said b'fana nechtem, ela din pen, osi lechlufa, b'kiyam shoris, da'alma be'edachon. But the problem is, then you might confuse it with the ordinary case of kiyam shoris. Ordinarily, kiyam shoris, we said, needs two edim. If you're going to say that all he has to say is b'fana nechtem, people are going to think that you can do kiyam shoris ordinarily based on one edim.
That is so different.
And I ask the question, Rabba would answer back. How can you compare it? Hasam yad inan, in a case of kiyam shoris, all you need is edim to say, we recognize the signatures, they're not to be done in their presence. Hacha b'fanai, here I say it was signed in my presence. Hasam isha loy mehena, in a regular case of kiyam shoris, you can't believe a woman, just like where a woman is usually postulated. Hacha isha mehena, here a woman is believed, a woman can be a shliach for a get. Hasam baldava lemehaman, in a case of regular kiyam shtaris, one of the people who's involved in the shtar himself is not believed to certify the signatures. Hacha baldava mehaman, here the person himself, a woman herself, is allowed to be a shliach halacha.
Everything is different.
Yes?
And there's no confusion.
Exactly. The Rava Amalach, the Rava would answer you, also Hacha Kiyamin and Yajin and Milay Mehemni. Yes, but you know what? Over here, actually, suppose they didn't say the words Mephane Nechtem. Suppose he had two Edim, and they said, not two Edim, Tosfos discusses actually, we're talking about one Shliach over here. But if he said, I know these signatures, I recognize them, wouldn't we believe him? In other words, maybe he doesn't have to say the actual formula Mephane Nechtem. If he says, I recognize these signatures, that would be good enough. But Kibin to Ki'amri Yad'in and Behemni, so if he says Yad'in and when they can believe him, also look at the Kiyam Shoris Alma Be'edachot. So then you might think, people might think that ordinarily any Kiyam Shoris can be done by one aid, and in order to avoid that problem, we're going to require him to say Befana Nichtav as well, in order to show that this is not just a matter of Kiyam Shoris, this is a specific thing that applies to a get. Where we believe, we're going to believe
otherwise,
one aid for reasons of Iglim, like we said before, otherwise we would have required two.